The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. We're into hour two of this Wednesday's 9 till noon show. Hope you're doing very well out there today. Just some of your comments coming in so far this morning. A caller says, the doc, very interesting, but we must remember the human evolved outside in the sunlight. The rising cancer seems to be in the use of these chemicals we're putting into our bodies. And I get where you're coming from, but you know, you have only gone so far with the evolution. It's almost as if we evolved and then we stopped. Dependent on where you evolved in this world and dependent on the sunlight, your skin colour is different. So if you go to, go from the north, say us, you know, Denmark, Sweden, etc., and you look at the tone of the skin from the population that from where their ancestors came from, however one might phrase that in this day and age, but the colour of the skin, and then you move further south, and you get to sort of Spain, Portugal, and then you move further south, you get into North Africa, and then further down, getting closer to the equator. We evolved, but we evolved differently dependent on how much sunlight we'd be exposed to and how much sunlight we're used to soaking up and what have you. So I get where you're coming from in terms of human evolution, but you sort of stopped at one point and didn't sort of progress onto that we all evolved differently dependent on, you know, where our ancestors came from. Is fluoride toothpaste toxic? On the label, it says that it's not suitable for under 7s and in some cases under 12s. It depends on the amount of fluoride in it and how much fluoride you consume. Is it toxic? I think toxic's a very strong word. Some people avoid it altogether, but your water's got fluoride in it, and I think that's accounted for in those warnings in that young people are consuming fluoride in the water. And countries that don't have fluoride in the water, and that's a whole other conversation, but they have their teeth deteriorate much quicker than ours. We voted in politicians to represent us, to speak up for our needs and look after the people. It's time we bombarded our politicians of all parties to do what they were elected to do, represent us. Following last month, it's fantastic to see all top positions on the new council have finally been allocated to the usuals, while the new boys and gal from the Redress Party were totally ignored. Stitched up would be a better description. Another example of all change, no change in Donegal County Council. There are agreements, I believe that's coming in from Jim there. There are power-sharing agreements which also do determine the roles within council, for right or wrong. Regarding the deposit return scheme, businesses now want to put prices up. Government have taken away power for regulators to put up prices. I got a Mawadi diluted orange, and I twisted it. I just twisted it right. I didn't take into account that it's tethered. The cap is tethered to the bottle, and I find the bottles that you reseal milk very awkward because you have to get it over, you have to get it onto the thread, and then tighten it. I know it's a first world problem, but it's a pain in the bottom for me anyway. But I sort of rotated it and it broke off, and twice it's happened now, left really sharp shards of plastic which slipped my finger, cut my finger, and bled quite profusely, it has to be said. I don't know if you've found that, but I know you should say, well, don't open it so much and the lid will stay attached. But anyway, I did open it, ripped it off, and twice now I've got really nasty digs into my fingers. Once was a cut. I'm sitting in traffic at the Clanry at 25 to 10, and there aren't even schools open at the moment. The traffic is ridiculous. Wow. You would have just thought the town would really free up, Letterkenny town would really free up. But sitting outside the Clannery, trying to get into Letterkenny, and the traffic is ridiculous. A caller says, Irish people don't associate our weather with skin damage, yet my mother made me wear sunscreen regardless of the day from the day I was born because her mother had skin cancer. And I think, you know, obviously there's always going to be contributing factors, and I think a history of skin cancer in the family, definitely. I think your mum was spot on there. Just look at how many go on holidays to the sun. That's an example of just how many don't care about skin cancer and only interested in looking good for 2 to 3 weeks in the year. It's crazy. People are making decisions, and the doctor said that. The study found that people know there is an increased risk of skin cancer with sun exposure. They know there's an even greater risk of skin cancer with sunbed use, but they still use them because they make a decision that it's worth it. Hi, good on them people. Keep them fighting for their nurse in Fawn. I'm in Mallon here and would love to go to that meeting. We all need to fight for our rights. A caller says the biggest problem is that the HSE is not fit for purpose. They do not put the patient first, and indeed, maybe not even the actual medical staff. It is a monster that's gobbling up money while looking after itself at the cost of those who need it. It should be dissembled and maybe go back to the old Northwestern Health Board model. And the amount of money, and I think this is really an issue within government circles as well, I think really the big undiscussed story is the value for money. In the HSC, there is an awful lot of money. Our money, our spend on our health services is a lot higher than other countries, and yet it is what it is. And I do think there's a reluctance not to throw any further money into it by the current government until such time as that's resolved, or it's reformed, or it works better, because putting more money in doesn't seem to improve output. Greg, government can't have services for Irish, but thousands more to come. A comment I was expecting there. Regarding the nurse in Farn, is there an individual who signed off on this letter by the HSC? There must be an individual in the HSC who signed off on this. Well, again, just like St. Joseph's a couple of months ago, we're being told by the HSC, Farn Health Centre is there, the nurse is there, everything is as it was, yet we know the nurse has been moved, we know the filing cabinets have been emptied, we know there's no medical supplies in there bar a leftover package of bandaging. So, as to say, either A, the HSC is trying to pull the wool over our eyes, or B, the management that respond to our emails aren't actually aware of what's going on the ground. It has to be resolved. The caller says this Farn situation needs to be posed to Donnelly, Stephen Donnelly. Well, listen, we're contacting everyone, including the health minister. Morning, Greg. The health centre is a vital part of our community. The HSC are ridiculous. She was essential and stopped the need for the hospital and helped ease the issue of doctor waiting. I myself used the service after an issue with an operation. I couldn't drive, so it was essential to my recovery. That could be an ambulance, you see. There's a person, a man or woman, I'm not sure which, who was able to get aftercare with that nurse and potentially avoided having to get an ambulance into the hospital and sit in A&E for 12 hours, do you know? Hi, Greg. Living in Bridgend and have used the nurse in Fawn through the home help carers on several occasions. The nurse that covered that area was fabulous and vital that we have her depend on. The nurse needs reinstated ASAP. The security of even knowing she's there to call upon is absolutely essential. That's a really important factor, the security of knowing someone is there, whether you need them or not, particularly for older people that feel more vulnerable. And I'm really glad that listener is... highlighted that, because that's the immeasurable part of this decision. But they conclude by saying it is another blow for Donegal. I've been asked to mention that as part of the National Leakage Programme, Farron's Construction, working on behalf of Ishka Éireann, are carrying out essential water mains rehabilitation works tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. It'll cause a water outage in the Castlefin Main Street, Market CL. What's CL? Diamond Court, Chapel Street, Longbray, Raffle Road, Emmett Park within Castlefin area. And another one here just while I'm at it. As part of the National Leakage Programme, Farron's Construction... I've just read that one. Oh, that's today as well. There's two separate ones. Sorry. It's also today, the 3rd of July from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. This will cause water outages in the Ahalati, Carrigart, Kinilargi, Island Roy, Umla, Mulroy, Carrick, Cranford, Bog... Tony Loch, Drim, Bally O'Hagan and Coast Guard Cottages. That's today between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. And then tomorrow, sorry, it's a completely separate announcement in the Castlefin area between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Scheduled outages to try and get rid of leaks, they tell us. Alan Shatter, good morning, Alan. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Yeah, good morning to you.
Right, now, the first line here in the small amount of notes that I have reads, our inheritance tax system is state-approved grave robbery.
Well,
do you subscribe to that?
Yeah, effectively, that's what it now is. The inheritance tax reform campaign is saying the time has come to have a fundamental examination of inheritance tax, the policy behind it. Whether it's desirable it be entirely abolished or, as a very minimum, fundamentally reformed. And the reason we're saying that is because people take for granted that it's there, that nothing much has been done about it. The political establishment is ignoring it. But we forget that inheritance tax is really the resources accumulated by a deceased person left to family members in a will, normally. And the state comes along and says, we'll take a bit of that. We're entitled to some of that. And basically, the state is stealing resources that people have properly accumulated through, you know, taxable income, they're tax compliant. And there's a number of European countries and countries outside the EU that have now abolished inheritance tax because they take the view that parents and grandparents should have the right and be entitled to provide some financial assistance and security for their children, be they minors or adult children or grandchildren or nephews and nieces, without the state interfering in it. The problem really is also this tax has become a lot more draconian. Mm-hmm. Back in 2008, there was a far greater exemptions. For example, in 2008, if you left property in your will to a son or daughter, before inheritance tax came along to take some of it, you could leave assets of up to $540,000. And in addition to that, you might leave a family home. At that time, the inheritance tax rate was 20%. Today, if a son or daughter receives some inheritance benefit, after a value of $335,000, the tax hits. The tax rate is 33%, not 20% as it was back in 2008. And it's simply unfair. And what it does is undermine the value of couples, middle-aged couples, elderly couples, really all parents. Mm. Operating their finances in a sensible and planned way, both to their benefit and to their family's benefit.
But just, Alan, in relation to this, this feels, and I'm open to correction on this, I'm coming at this with a degree of ignorance, but this feels like this will affect a small cohort of people, those already the most wealthy in society. I'm thinking of the average property value, for instance, here in Donegal, far below the threshold. I'm not sure how many listening to us will ever be faced with a €54,000 bill on a €500,000 inheritance. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Of course it happens. But is this not really just us seeking another tax break for the wealthiest in society?
No, this isn't about the wealthiest in society at all. I appreciate the family home values in Donegal may be different to those in Cork, Dublin, Galway, various other parts of the country. But for example, where I live in South Dublin, my old political constituency, I'm not involved in politics anymore, nor am I a member of Fine Gael anymore, but my own political constituency, a very modest home will cost between 400 to 500,000. And I'm talking about a modest home. A couple pass away, they leave that to their son or daughter. The son or daughter is going to have a bill of €54,000. Now, this is a couple who's been tax compliant. They've paid their mortgage over the years. Why should the state come along and say, hello, we want over $50,000 from...
And they're liable for that straight away, are they? So, in other words, and they may not actually have that money themselves, so their inheritance is, obviously, there is the value of the property, but would they have to liquidate that if they have no access to that money otherwise to pay the $54,000 in this example?
They have two choices. They can raise a mortgage on a home that their deceased parent may over 15 years or 20 years previously had to pay a mortgage on, or as does happen quite frequently, the home has to be sold. And really what's happened is the rates are completely out of sync of where we were. If you take it that in 2008, when I talk about assets, it's not just necessarily a home, up to €540,000 could be inherited by a son or daughter without any inheritance tax payable. Today it's €335,000. If we look at where we are today, for example, property values now exceed by about 10% the highest levels they were at during the what we call the Celtic Tiger boom. And if we'd kept pace with inflation, as a minimum, the inheritance tax exemption for children, and I'm talking mostly this is going to impact on adult children, should be about 700,000.
But that's the logical thing to do, isn't it? That this to be that the inheritance tax to be linked to property prices or inflation, sorry.
Well, at very minimum, the exemption rates should be now substantially revised and increased. And the actual rate of tax, which was previously 20% and became 33% because the state was in financial crisis, should revert to 20%, which is where it's at in a number of European countries. But if you go beyond this, if, there's a lot of people in this country. There are families throughout the country who are aware of the difficulties young people experience, not just in getting a home, but in meeting the basic outgoings of life. There are many, many young people who are in significant debt, and they have parents who would like to relieve that debt. They may not be able to do it during their lifetime. They can do it possibly in their wills. And you have grandchildren in that position. And if you look at the extended family, like grandchildren, nieces and nephews, this law is really, truly crazy. You couldn't, if you had a grandchild and left the grandchild more than 32,500 in your will, the state will come along and take one third of the excess. The same for nephews and nieces. And again, that's a far more draconian position than we're in 2008. The figures are sort of interesting. In 2008, when it came to inheritances by children, the state accumulated about 50 million euros by way of inheritance tax. In 2023, and I'm going to deliberately put it this way, the state stole from bereaved children 215 million euros. That's a quadruple increase in the taking from this tax. Similar figures apply to grandchildren. It was in the region of about 120 million in 2008. It was 270 million in 2023. So what I'm saying is, on behalf of the inheritance tax reform campaign, we need to revisit this tax. Mm. I believe it should be abolished. If not, it needs to be radically changed and reformed, not just, for example, tinkered with
budget. Yeah, some of your former party colleagues claim that, you know, this will leave a big hole in the finances and you actually, if I highlighted that yourself, what, around about 300 odd million? And they obviously then linked that to the provision of affordable housing, as you would imagine a politician might. That it does leave a significant shortfall for government, though.
It doesn't, because government can reorder the finances as they choose. And the bit of this that we haven't discussed is inheritance tax is a very strange tax, because apart from the financial exemptions I've mentioned, there's a whole range of exemptions which are really about social engineering and politics. I've no objection to any of these, but they illustrate how ridiculous the tax is. For example, you have what's known as the agricultural relief. Someone could inherit a farm and a home on a farm worth many millions and end up being exempt from 90% of the tax because of agricultural relief. There's business relief. You can inherit a business and be substantially exempt from tax. And then you have the biggest anomaly of all, which is replies, in a sense, to the housing issue. If we had the money, you and I tomorrow morning in our will could make a will leaving, say, half a million euros to a housing charity, and money left to any charity, including a housing charity in a will, rightly, the charity doesn't pay any tax on it. So if you leave money to a housing charity, it's exempt from inheritance tax. But if you leave a house to a son or a grandson or a niece or a nephew, or if you leave some significant portion of your legally accumulated assets during your lifetime to the son or the grandson or the niece or the nephew, the state basically comes along and says, I want a large piece of that. So there's no logical or reasonable or fair consistency in the way the tax works.
Alan, listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Alan Shatter, who is now the chair of the Inheritance Tax Reform Campaign, also a former Justice, Equality and Defence Minister. And of course, that's going to be of interest to people. We get lots of questions on tax liability when we have Seamus Gunn on. So there are certainly people this affects out there. Many of us, it simply doesn't, because we wouldn't be in line for any inheritance at all, let alone anything along these lines. And also, too, a thought on those of you affected by defective concrete who effectively have homes that are worthless. We were talking about a modest house in Dublin. What is it, 300,000 to 500,000? We have houses here that maybe were once worth 200,000, 250,000 and now are worth nothing but a pile of defective concrete rubble, which is actually a charge to get shot of it. So always thinking in that regard, by the way. So if that irked you, my apologies. My uncle left me a house and land which was worth a lot. I had to pay €33,000 to get into my name. The estate is worth less than €200, but after tax and legal fees, it cost me €38,000. As a nephew, I got €30,000 tax-free, and after that, I was hit with a charge. I ended up having to borrow money just to hold on to a family farm. It is ridiculous. No farm relief there, as Alan was outlining, clearly, in that case, or if there was some, certainly not enough. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. That number, we're going to be talking about the elections coming up in Northern Ireland and Britain in the not-too-distant future. OK, we have Joe Corkery of the Special Needs Parents Network, Donegal in studio with us. Good morning, Joe.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling up. We were talking earlier on, actually, about the Fawn Health Centre closing.
Yeah.
And it's not closing, according to the HSE, but the locals know it's closing. And there's some powerful people who are not taking no for an answer there. And it put me in mind of you guys.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? The power of the people when you organise and you get together. You can win little battles. The war is a long haul, don't get me wrong. But it really is important. You have to take these issues, don't you? Take the bull by the horns yourselves as much as is possible. That's really how things get done.
It is, absolutely. And I suppose one lesson that we've learned, and anyone out there that has, you know, an illness or a disability or is a caregiver knows the importance of advocacy. And anyone out there with a disability, the importance of self-advocacy. And I suppose that's why tomorrow night, tomorrow evening at 6 p.m, in Dillon's Hotel in Letterkenny, SNP and Donegal are hosting a legal clinic with KM solicitors. So that's Andrew Murnaghan and Patrick Kevins are coming to us up to Donegal to talk to us about disability and carers law with a legal clinic and information event.
OK, so assisted decision making is a relatively new or reformed concept.
Yes, and it's a hard one to get your head around. And it's a really important. It's something that we have a lot of individuals coming to learn more about tomorrow evening. So it's really an area where I suppose a rights-based approach to decision making for those that maybe don't have the capacity to make a decision for themselves with regards to their health or their financial affairs. There is a legal framework for that now, and it's really, really important for us to understand how that impacts us.
And Joe, if we've seen it in action, because even just reading it, OK, assisted decision making. So firstly, you have to determine someone's ability to make a decision.
Absolutely.
Then you sort of have to have someone who is appointed to assist in that decision. But then you've got competing rights, of course. You've got the carer's rights. You've got the individual's rights as well. So for me, as I say, I haven't had a real life experience of this or dug into it. But it sounds complicated. Do you believe it's as complicated in action as it is sort of as it appears on paper?
Unfortunately, I do.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
I think it is going to be very complicated. And I think it is something that anyone out there who has, you know, and I suppose our clinic tomorrow night, I want to make it very clear while we're the Special Needs Parents Network Donegal, it is going to be relevant for anyone with a disability. If you're a caregiver for your husband, for your wife, you know, for your child, for your parent, you have rights from legislation and it's important for us to be aware of them. But to go back to assisted decision making, yeah, it is going to be, it is complicated. It is new for us. Mm-hmm. So it is something that anyone who is a caregiver for anyone over the age of 18, it's important for us to understand the framework.
And there. Primarily it's very important for them. But I think it is also important for the people involved in the care.
Absolutely.
Because these things can get kind of complex and messy down the line too sometimes, can't they?
Yeah, and I suppose the purpose and the function of the legislation is a very positive one.
Yeah.
You know, it is there to protect people.
And we got rid of some disgusting words as well as part of this process that were enshrined in our constitution from centuries ago.
Yeah, well, language is really important. Mm. Absolutely. So assisted decision making is going to be something that we're going to be talking about tomorrow evening, along with domiciliary care allowance. So domiciliary care allowance is a payment that a family can apply for a child with a severe disability. It's about €330 a month. There's a large proportion of claims that are refused upon initial application. And then there's up to 81% that are overturned. You know, so I suppose the message there is you're entitled to this if you are refused a domiciliary care payment.
Because there is a proportion of the association, there's a proportion of the population that go, you know what, they've made a decision and that's that. But those that don't take no for an answer, 8 out of 10
exactly.
of them end up actually getting it. So well worth appealing.
Well worth appealing.
And these kind of meetings empower people to appeal because some of us, are, you know, we're all different, right?
Yeah.
In different ways. And some just go, right, okay, well, that's the decision.
I know.
Don't upset the apple cart or whatever it might be.
Very
but, you know, knowledge is power and going to a meeting like this might empower people to have the confidence to appeal.
Absolutely, exactly. And look, I mean, there is, statistically, there is, you know, there's a lot of research out there about how the cost of disability is very high. Like, we pay a lot more if you have a disability just to access,
just
you know, services.
Closer,
yeah, no problem. Just to access services and, you know, to pay for the equipment that you need and, you know, medical supplies and food and all of that type of thing. So domiciliary care allowance is very important, and it's important for us to be aware of our entitlements and that if it is refused, that you can appeal it. And there's a very, very high chance that you'll get that decision overturned. We'll also be talking about things like your right to education. So it's actually startling and frightening that, you know, it's only 30 years now that those individuals with a disability actually have a right to an appropriate education. It's taken by a really landmark case. It's taken by the O'Donoghue family in Cork. And, you know, they changed the landscape and the futures of disabled children and adults, you know, throughout the country. So we'll learn a bit more about the Epson Act and how that impacts children and families. And then assessment of need is something we're going to be speaking about. And one of the things in SNPN Donegal that we're really, I suppose, concerned about is there is a large proportion of families out there who are accessing private diagnosis now because they can't access them through the HSC. Or maybe they're getting their diagnosis paid for by the HSC by a private provider. They're getting the diagnosis, but they don't know what they don't know. Well, they don't know what happens next. They don't know what, I suppose, they're entitled to. They don't know what services their child needs. The assessment of need is an application that anyone can apply for under the age of 17 that basically will give you a service statement with regards to the services that you need if you have a disability. And that's a really powerful entitlement for families.
You talked about the hard-won rights in terms of education and what have you. I wonder, are, you know, individuals with a disability or additional needs and indeed their caregivers actually aware of all of the rights that they have?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not aware of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it really it's about having the time to go and research this stuff.
Yeah,
so that's why we want to make it really accessible for people to access this information.
And when you come, when you have the likes of KM Solicitors and Dylan's Hotel, they really figure out, they know what's going on.
Yeah.
So they know the hot points that, well, you know, you wouldn't believe, you know, like that example that you gave a little earlier on of people not being aware of stuff, right? You know, they are going to know all the other areas.
Absolutely.
So it'll be condensed into the most useful information.
100%. And they're specialists when it comes to disability and carers law, so they're very familiar with it. They work with it every day and they've taken a number of cases and been very successful. So, you know, it's really, and I suppose what we're not trying to encourage litigation either. It's really all about just knowing what you're entitled to.
You know,
and it's important for self-advocacy.
If you, to obtain your rights that were already hard run, one, you have to litigate. You have to litigate. I mean, the HSE has an awful lot of cases on its desk at the moment from people advocating on behalf of people with a disability or additional needs.
Yeah, and look, that's the last resort for those families. Those cases take maybe 4 or 5 years to work through the course. No child can wait for that, or no individual with a disability can wait for, you know, the length of time that it takes to work a case through the courts. So, you know, I suppose what we would say is be aware of your rights, be aware of your entitlements, and that will enable you, I suppose, to advocate effectively for yourself.
Okay. So the Information and Advice Clinic for Disability and Carers, not just those, obviously, we have Joe here from the Special Needs Parents Network, Donegal.
Yep.
Hopefully a great attendance from people under that
it
umbrella.
Looks pretty good for now,
but, you know, there's lots of other people that this applies to as well. And I'll just read the pamphlet here. If you're interested in learning more about your legal rights, these are your legal rights. We are delighted to host Patrick Kevins and Andrew Murnaghan of KM Solicitors for a free legal information and advice clinic where you can learn more about topics such as DCI, as I mentioned, or as Joe mentioned, assessment of need, assessed decision making, which is a new thing as well, education rights, or your rights as a carer or individual with a disability and additional needs. Now, it is in Dillon's Hotel, Letterkenny. It's a good start time, I think, 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Not too early and not too late. It is free, late. It is free to attend, but places are limited. You've already had a good subscription to it. So you want people to
We want people to register if possible. So what I would say is email us at snpn.donegal. .com or, you know, we've got a Facebook page, you can link in with that, or look, you know, if it happens that you don't get a chance to register, just come along on the night. Okay. We wouldn't turn anyone away. Ideally, if you can register, because it gives us an insight, I suppose, as to the topics that are of interest to you. I know. No, but it does give us a bit of an insight as to what's interesting to you so that we know to spend a bit more time on assisted decision making, for example.
So
we can kind of tailor it for the audience.
Exactly, 100%. So if you can do that. And contact us here. I'll tell you what we'll do, actually. We'll link up on our social as well, because people access that regularly and they just click the link.
Yeah,
big attendance, hopefully. Full capacity would be fantastic. And it's going to be really, really useful information. You don't have to be under the sort of umbrella, if you like, of the Special Needs Parents Network. Anyone with a disability or a carer with a person of a disability or additional needs that wants to know more about the complex, what potentially could be complex assessment of need. Also, too, if you refuse your DCA, 8 out of 10 people who appeal have that overturned.
So
I wonder,
amazing.
Is it backdated once it's overturned?
There is some backdating.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
this
no, absolutely.
Could be
definitely
really,
worth
really
it.
Worthwhile.
100%,
$3.30 a month, but if you add that up, we wish it were more, but it's better in your pocket than not.
For sure.
Okay, Joe, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Melly, for having us.
No, it's our pleasure. Joe Corkery there of the Special Needs Parents Network, Donegal. A summer Britain and Northern Ireland general election is in the offing. It's happening this week, believe it or not. Pat McCarts, the former editor of the Derry Journal and a columnist at the Daily Mirror, a podcaster as well. Good morning to you. Thanks very much for your time. Pat, how are you keeping?
I'm grand, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. So polling stations open across Northern Ireland tomorrow for the public to choose the 18 MEPs to represent the country. Obviously, there's big changes in Britain. Labour expecting a landslide, even maybe a supermajority. The Tories may well be like wiped out. We don't see such shifts, do we, in Northern Irish politics? That's not to say there won't be any surprises, of course.
No, Greg, there are 18 constituencies as we speak. Currently, the DUP have 8 seats, Sinn Féin have 7, the SDLP have 2, that's Colm Eastwood and Claire Hanna, and Alliance have 1, so that's your man Stephen Farry, and I think it's North Down he's in. But anyway, the big contest is really, Greg, I think the party with the most to lose is the DUP. They are on a getting it on the neck from every which direction because of the Windsor framework.
How big of an impact do you think on this election and the way people vote? Geoffrey Donaldson, effectively, he's going to be in every news bulletin this evening and also across every newspaper in Northern Ireland tomorrow morning. Can politics in Northern Ireland be swayed by such things?
I think so, Greg. The unionist community is comprises many elements. There is that righteous Bible belt thing that does infuse a lot of unionist voting. You know, the people who go to church and read their Bibles and so on, and that is definitely a factor in unionism. And there's going to be various other factors involved as well. But this time, Lagan Valley, where Geoffrey Donaldson was the MP, it was formed about 40 years ago. And Geoffrey Donaldson has been the MP for, 30 of those years, Greg. On top of that, on about 2014, he had about a 20,000 majority. And along comes Saoirse Eastwood from the Alliance Party. And she cut it down to 6,400, I think it was at the last election. So she actually made a big impact. So this time, she's obviously more in the running again. So I'd say the DUP are nervous because of the the Donaldson factor this time, that he's in court and whatever else. So they must be worried about that. See, there's a lot sort of at play there. So they're going to be battling there. They're going to be battling in South Antrim. Paul Girvan is the guy there, but he's up against Robin Swan, who was the former minister, or well, currently still is the former health minister. And Swan got a lot of kudos for the way he had handled COVID, and he's in the running there. So that's going to be a very interesting. And of course, the big one, the really big one, the one everyone's interested in is Gavin Robinson is the guy in East Belfast for the DUP, and he took a seat from Naomi Long, the leader of the Alliance, in 2019, but he only took it by about 1,600 votes. And he's in the race of his political life this time, because Naomi Long is sort of seems to be on an upward trajectory. So if she gets in there and he loses his seat, the implications, Greg, for the DUP, there's three seats that they could possibly lose. Now, I'm not saying they will lose them, but they could possibly lose. But one other, Greg, I think is interesting, is that in North Antrim, Ian Paisley, you know the Paisley name, since 1970, Paisley's family has held the, imagine, just think of 1970, the name Paisley has held the North Antrim seat, you know, so that's, what, 54 years? And anyway, Jim Allister is fighting Ian Paisley Jr. and that seat. Now, I don't know if Allister has enough to win, but it could give him a real bloody nose in his constituency. So basically what I'm trying to say, Greg, if you're asking an overall opinion, the party that's really got a lot to lose in this one is the DUP.
How do you think things will play out in Foyle? Some would call it Colm Eastwood's one of the safest seats in Northern Ireland, but surprises have been thrown up before. Maybe Sinn Féin have, are working better as a unit up there to try and rally the troops, so to speak. Do you anticipate any surprises?
Sandra Duffy, the Sinn Féin candidate, be doing really well. Greg, I think if she cuts his majority down, you know, by 4,000 or 5,000, it'll be a really successful campaign. To overturn 17,000 majority, Greg, I think it's on this time out. And I know Sandra, I've met her a couple of times. She's a genuinely nice woman and a very affable and, you know, a woman of ability. But I watched the debate, the leaders' debate on BBC, and Eastwood won it by a mile. He was actually very impressive. And I think, unless there's a big upset, but I can't see Eastwood losing a seat this time around.
So, what do you think the level of public engagement is in this election? Are you getting any sense of that, Pat, from your various contacts and having your feelings out there?
It's a very low-key, really is. I was in Tullamore Sports Complex yesterday, and that's usually a weather vane. And, you know, in fact, there's a guy come up and started talking to me about the Joe Biden and Donald Trump, and I was going, he's not even interested in what's going on here. And I thought, you know, that's it's very, very low-key. I think it's big. Let's put someone in perspective. There was a lot of talk, and I've heard about Northern Ireland, about taking your seat. By the way, that's not anything to do with Sinn Féin or anybody else, abstentionism, but it just puts it in context. London has 73 seats. Northern Ireland has 18. I sort of said to myself, how do you sort of laugh? Remember a couple of weeks back, Jim Allister of the TUV made a big song and dance about that he had joined up with Reform, and that they were going to sort of, they were no longer a little parochial party. They were now connected with a really big movement in Britain and so on. And he signed the deal with Richard Tice. I remember they were on Talkback, and there were all sorts of things on BBC Talkback. 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, along comes Nigel Farage and says, by the way, you might have had a deal, but I'm backing, as TV leader, I'm backing Sammy Wilson and Ian Paisley. And, you know, they wouldn't have done that to the SNP in Scotland or Plaid Cymru in Wales. They just dismissed. And I thought, that's the level of contempt that the mainland, if you'll pardon that expression, British politicians have for Northern Ireland.
Alex, I'll pardon it. I'm not sure everyone will. Pat, I don't know if this is down to me, and things are really busy at the moment, and I haven't seen any of the BBC or RTE or UTV coverage on this, but I don't really actually, I would struggle even to give a proper sense of what the key issues here are. Do you know what I mean? But that could be a me problem, if you know what I mean.
I think if you did a vox pop on the streets of Derry or the Shankill Road, you know, Greg, it always comes down to identity politics. Yeah. Let's get this. Greg, Northern Ireland is in an economic basket case right now. It's got the worst health waiting lists in Britain by some considerable distance. The infrastructure in the hospitals, they even can't get some, and some of the hospitals, they can't even get their ambulances to discharge patients. The education system has fallen apart. A lot of their teachers are leaving and going to Australia and places like that. And you don't hear any mention of it hardly at all, unless you listen to sort of specialist programs. It's not a sort of, you know, the man on the street talking about, oh, isn't that? But without question, Greg, their health service, I heard...
And the public, can't be blameless on this either, Pat. You know, we often talk to politics and what have you, but, you know, we as the public too are not without blame. If we're more motivated to vote on one thing, like identity or religion or however you want to frame it, compared to who the hell's going to improve services and facilities in Foyle, at Altnagelvin Hospital, you know, in our villages and our towns, well, you get what you vote for. And if you're going to vote along very specific historical lines, as I say, we can't say we're not somewhat responsible for that.
Yeah, well, look at this, Greg. I think that the Northern Ireland Assembly has been down, and suspended as often as it's been working in this last sort of 10 years. You mentioned identity politics. Identity politics are everywhere. Look at the fact that Sinn Féin went for Pat Cullen in North and Fermanagh, South Tyrone, you know, a former leader of the nursing union and so on. And it's like, maybe somebody in North Antrim should ask, how good a job has the Paisley name done for Ballymena? You know, they just vote for him. And there was a certain senior Fianna Fáil politician told me that, I'll name it, doesn't really matter. Senator Bernard McGlinchey said to me one time about 50 years ago, 40 years ago, look, Fianna Fáil could put up a donkey in Anishona in order to get elected. There's an element of that. And, you know, it doesn't matter about delivery. It doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how intelligent you are. It doesn't matter how good a politician you are. As long as you're branded in the right way, you will get the votes. And your point is actually very, very good. Judges, that's another man.
No, Greg,
because it's that sort of thing. Basically, the people vote along party lines. Nothing to do with delivery, and there's been some unbelievable cases of people getting elected without it being even any way competent.
Okay, Pat, you're always very competent. We do appreciate it. Thank you so very much indeed for your insights. Take care, Pat.